Good morning, Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. The military is back in open control of Haiti after just 4 months of civilian rule there. Troops loyal to Lieutenant General Henri Namphy freed him from house arrest, fought their way into the National Palace, and overthrew President Leslie Manigat, who less than a week ago fired Namphy as head of the military. Overnight, wearing a helmet and combat fatigues, Namphy went on the air to tell the nation he's back in charge. The BBC's Alan Tomlinson was in Port-au-Prince as Namphy's coup unfolded.
At the head of a contingent of soldiers and armored vehicles, he descended under the center of Port-au-Prince, stormed the National Palace, occupied it, and then soon thereafter went on television here to announce that he was back at the head of troops. And although he didn't say he was in charge, it had clearly been a dramatic reversal for what had seemed like a successful maneuver by President Manigat, who had seemed to have managed to clip Namphy's wings and stage a military coup himself.
Some soldiers loyal to Manigat are said to have died in the palace fighting. A reporter for the French wire service said Manigat told him this morning he was uninjured.
The situation is very tense. There's nothing moving on the street. Nobody dares go out. We appear to have some kind of a standoff situation in the palace area between Namphy supporters with the general in the National Palace and Manigat supporters with his principal military ally, Colonel Jean-Claude Paul. He's apparently holed up in army barracks at the rear of the National Palace, and there appears to be some kind of ultimatum from Namphy for him to give up, although I suspect negotiations are imminent.
Assistant Secretary of State Elliot Abrams told CBS News this morning the U.S. will consult with other countries before deciding what action to take on Haiti. White House correspondent Terrence Smith with President Reagan in Toronto reports on reaction there.
I spoke with Marlon Fitzwater, the White House spokesman, who had just gotten a fill on it, the overnight developments, through the White House Situation Room. He said this is obviously a setback for the United States, which had been working with Manigat in an effort to try to restore civilian rule and democracy in Haiti. Clearly, this is going in the wrong direction and has upset U.S. plans to try to restore democracy there.
Terrence Smith in Toronto. An Israeli farmer has been bludgeoned to death at a collective farm near the occupied West Bank, and police are seeking a Palestinian suspect. He would be the fourth Israeli killed since the Palestinian uprising began in December. At least 210 Arabs have died. Israeli officials today revealed that hardline Defense Minister Rabin last night discussed the uprising with prominent Arabs from the occupied territories. In the past month, they said, Rabin has met as often as four times a week with Palestinians of varying political views, including known PLO members. Officials would not identify the Palestinians, saying that might endanger them. One person was killed, another seriously injured in a car bombing in the western Puerto Rican city of Mayagüez. Police say the dead man was Jeff Parker, a visitor from the States. Police say the two had rigged the bomb when it went off. At the Big Seven Economic Summit in Toronto, British officials are reporting tentative agreement this morning to give debt relief to some of Africa's poorest nations, including, in some cases, outright debt forgiveness. More on the summit from correspondent Doug Poling.
Before this summit began, one American economist predicted it would be a love fest. It seemed to start off that way. The host, Canadian Prime Minister Mulroney, said confidence and optimism were the overriding themes during the first meeting. British Prime Minister Thatcher reviewed the world economic situation since the early 1980s and said it's been a period of strong growth and low inflation. The summit partners also congratulated themselves on their efforts to resist protectionism and achieve free trade. There are some contentious issues. President Reagan conceded that it will be years before his goal of ending all farm subsidies will be achieved. But the 14th Economic Summit got off to an amiable start. More on President Reagan's activities here from CBS News White House correspondent Jacqueline Adams.
At this, President Reagan's farewell economic summit, the seven leaders have been looking both forward and backward. Today's session is expected to give the leaders a chance to outline their strategies for the 90s. White House spokesman Marlon Fitzwater said Mr. Reagan's watchword will be flexibility.
In terms of interest rates and structural rigidities in the economy, deregulation are the key towards the next 10 years.
This summit has seen a minimum of pomp amid some of the tightest security ever. Skittish police declared a condition red as President Reagan drove into the city yesterday. The reason? A man was carrying a bag marked ammunition. His lunch was inside. I'm Jacqueline Adams. With more on the summit, here's Doug Poling.
There's been little to spoil the upbeat mood in Toronto, but some 2,000 demonstrators vented their feelings yesterday. Espousing a host of causes, including Nicaragua, they tried to march on the summit headquarters and burned an American flag. More than 100 were arrested. Canadian police also held a suspected IRA operative arrested over the weekend. But the Canadians have extremely tight security in effect here. They want a peaceful summit and are showcasing the city, partly in an effort to boost its chances of being named host to the 1996 Summer Olympics. Doug Poling, CBS News, Toronto.
Under a landmark trade agreement announced in Tokyo today, American cattlemen will eventually be $1 billion a year richer, and Japanese consumers will pay a lot less for beef and oranges. U.S. Trade Representative Clayton Yeider said the pact calls for Japan to increase imports and lower some of its tariffs on U.S. beef and oranges over the next 6 years.
We've come a long way over the last several months. And I'm convinced that we do have what is truly a mutually satisfactory conclusion. That is one that is in the best interest of both countries.
The Pentagon fraud and bribery investigation continues on several fronts. David Martin reports.
Operation Ill Wind, the investigation into Pentagon bribery, could result in something like 100 indictments, according to Senator Charles Grassley, who has been briefed on the case.
It's an ethic within the Defense Department, an ethic that breeds an attitude that among the defense industry, catch us if you can.
A search warrant disclosed by the publication Defense Week alleges that United Technologies, a giant defense contractor, had sensitive documents belonging to General Electric, its arch rival in bidding on contracts to sell the Pentagon engines for the F-18 jet fighter and the V-22 vertical takeoff and landing plane. The suggestion is that United Technologies got the General Electric documents from someone in the Pentagon. Senate Armed Services Chairman Sam Nunn explains the bottom line.
The prices being paid for military procurement may very well be higher than they would be if we had true competition rather than, in many cases, if the allegations are true, rigged competition.
Those higher prices eventually come out of the taxpayers' pocket. David Martin, CBS News, Washington.
The dollar is mixed overseas. Gold prices are up nearly $4, and on Wall Street, the Dow is off 18.5 points at 2085.62. It's 7:10.